Here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, a podcast to improve your practice as an athletic trainer. I'm Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast, but today we're talking to Dr. David Smith, inventor of the Q-Collar. I know on Twitter there was quite a conversation about what is that thing that they, I think it was one of the Dallas Cowboys receivers or something like that, that kind of sparked the biggest conversation is, what is that thing he's wearing around his neck, and is that safe, and all those other things. And that was the first time I'd seen it, was this year in the NFL. But apparently you've been using it for quite a while. So this is actually sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Q-Collar, where I'll have a ton of ways to get a hold of Dr. David Smith, and you can find out a little bit more there. So Dr. David Smith, welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast.
Thank you very much. Enjoy being here.
All right. So looking at the bio, the website, all this stuff, you said in 2008, somebody said, why hasn't somebody that's really smart figured out how to prevent traumatic brain injury, right? And so you said that was at the Army Research Lab. Tell me a little bit more about that conversation, and then take us there as we begin the process of Q-Collar.
Well, believe it or not, I'm an internal medicine specialist. We kind of are the detectives of the medical world, and I owned a wound care company at the time, and I was standing at the Army Research Lab on an unrelated project to help our soldiers not bleed out on the battlefield. And when I got done, the project coordinator walked up and kind of opined in a complaining manner that they'd had, you know, $100 billion and 100 years of research into traumatic brain injury, and they haven't been able to figure out a way to move the needle. And a guy in the front row said, hey, I think if somebody could figure out how a woodpecker can smack its head into a tree 80 million times and fly away unharmed, wouldn't we have this whole thing figured out? And everybody cracked up, except for me, because that's absolutely right. Nature had obviously figured this out, and we needed to move a different direction. So 6 months later, kind of figured out how all the highly G-force tolerant creatures of the forest seem to be able to get away with massive blows to their heads.
So looking at one of the graphics or the comics kind of that you drew, it looked like Noah's Ark and the animals. And there's, like you said, there's a woodpecker poking holes in the boat in the conventional wisdom. Why did you choose that image or that graphic?
Because it is kind of true that the direction that we took is not one that has been well traveled. And yet, if you think about it, 20 million years of natural selection and evolutionary processes in these animals, woodpeckers, 80 million head impacts, and they've hit their trees at 120 G's, or excuse me, 1200 G's, when you and I tend to get a concussive event at 120 G's. So obviously there's something there. Head ramming sheep at 500 G's, giraffes are also head ramming animals. So it's a non-conventional way of going about just one change in helmet structure versus another when we haven't really gotten anywhere.
All right. So going back to a little bit more of the Q-Collar. So talked about like that really got your wheel spinning back in 2008 at the Army Research Labs. So talk to me a little bit. I think he says there's 15 versions of 28 patents or something like that in the Q-Collar. Does that sound about right?
We have 42 patents, 28 published vetted articles with the likes of Harvard, Mayo Clinic, Cincinnati Children's, University of Cincinnati, University of Toronto, West Virginia, Chicago. I mean, we've really spread around the academic power to be able to come up with a means that truly is backed up by science.
All right. So just talk a little bit more about how you came up with the idea of pressing on the neck.
So when I was addressed with this woodpecker conundrum, if you want to put it that way, I immersed into the woodpecker physiology. And the first thing I recognized is that they live in cavities. And there's actually a whole classification of animals called cavity nesting birds. So I looked at this list that I'd never heard of before, and there's all these highly G-force tolerant strafing predator birds. Peregrine falcons come down at 220 miles an hour, pull up at the last second and grab their prey. I mean, flycatchers, owls, you name it. They all seem to be on this list of animals that live in a cavity. So I took off and started trying to find out if there's something unique about a cavity. Well, there is. There's no oxygen in there. So a normal oxygen level is 21%, but inside the cavity is only 16%. And here's the big clincher. The normal carbon dioxide level of the atmosphere is 0.0%, whereas inside these cavities, it's a full 5%. 5%. That's 125 times the carbon dioxide. Well, as a physiologist and doctor, I know that carbon dioxide is the number one determinant of the volume of fluid inside your brain. And it suddenly hit me that this might be a hydrodynamics or something coined as slosh. And what slosh is a fun term that NASA actually coined back in the 50s when one rocket ship after another went up into outer space, and then the liquid rocket fuel started to dissipate. That liquid rocket fuel would start sloshing around, and that would absorb the energy of the rocket engines and explode. And so I shamelessly stole this from NASA, and I started calling it brain slosh in 2008, and it kind of stuck. Got my research partner was Dr. Julian Bales. You might remember him from the movie Concussion. He was played by Alec Baldwin, and Bennett Omalu was played by Will Smith, both of those actors in the news here recently. But at the end of the day, what's fun is that they actually approached me and asked if they could use my props for that movie. I mean, there's a woodpecker sitting on Alec Baldwin's desk, which is Julian's desk, and they've got all these, you know, Newton's cradle balls and all these different ways of helping people understand how energy is absorbed into structures. And I was off to the races realizing how these animals might do it. And then the clincher for the cue collar was the woodpecker tongue. The tongue is attached to the top bridge of its beak and goes up, and it separates behind both eyes, goes all the way back behind, comes around the ears and attaches to both jugulars, reattaches to itself, and goes in and out with every single blow. And there were over 500,000 Google hits on why this creature might anatomically look like this, right? Well, it helped being a medical internist because I knew that we humans have omohyoid apparatuses as well, called the omohyoid muscles. And I know that our neurosurgeons hate these muscles because they're directly attached to the jugular, and they have to actually dissect it off the jugular to operate on your neck. So it appeared to me that there could be something here that, in fact, when the woodpecker's head moves forward, it is occluding its jugulars gently like we do with a yawn. So we started writing about this and publishing about this. Others started to recognize that what is happening during a yawn is you occlude your own jugulars in four places. So you talk about safety. If you fear putting on that cue collar, I would seriously be concerned about yawning the rest of your life as well. We are mimicking exactly the physiology of a yawn. And going one further, when you lie down at night or during the day, the volume and pressure inside your cranial space goes up higher than the cue collar imparts. So also, if you fear putting on the cue collar, I would be very cautioned about lying down ever again.
All right, so as you're talking about fearing the cue collar, so what are some of the things that people have said, like, other than I just don't know, it's new. Like, what are some of the maybe the athletes or the even the media, they've said, I don't know about this thing.
Right. Everybody has to understand there's a degree. And I know many people come back at me and say, well, the one article that they know about, well, there's 28 of them. And there is an enormity of research that went around behind this to prove its safety. And I'll just jump in here and say that we're the first and only medical device that the FDA has ever allowed to claim that we are safe and effective against preventing traumatic brain injury. In our animal studies, we blocked 83% of brain injury. In our human studies, which we're not allowed to dissect humans after they play a season of football, so we can't get exact numbers on the human side of things, but even the FDA allowed a 70% statement if you go look at the press release. And when they put out the press release, we didn't put that press release out. We got 350 million social media hits in 48 hours. This is a big deal. We've had 100 years of research and helmet changes and mouth guards and things, and no one's been able to get through the FDA with any claim at all, not even a 1% change. And here we're blocking 70 to 83%.
And then looking at the technology, the cue collar, like, it's super simple. It's really just like a plastic band that, like you said, occludes the jugulars. Tell me a little bit more about the structure, the makeup of the device itself.
Well, the goal was to make it look simple, but I assure you, after $19 million of research, we did 70 iterations to make this completely self-contained. So it has an exact coefficient of friction. It finds its own place on your neck once you're playing. It is a C collar rather than circumferentially going all the way around to make sure that it never imperils your trachea. Your trachea moves every time you swallow, and that's 1,000 times a day. The pressure that we apply, it's not just a plastic collar. There's actually a memory metal inside. And you know, metals don't tend to have a lot of memory. Look at a coat hanger. You move it in one position and it's stuck there for good unless you try to move it back. So the memory metal inside was quite pricey in this process, but we needed to make sure that over 100,000 actuations of opening and closing, and it compresses to the continuous exact amount that it did from the day one when you bought it. So those are some of just the engineering dilemmas that we had to go into. If you actually look at the amount of pressure before you start to realize how simple and harmless this is, if you look on the back of your hand and see veins back there and you compress it with your finger, that pressure when you actually compress that vein on your hand is 30 millimeters of mercury. And that pressure comes from this column of fluid that goes all the way up the arm, goes all the way to the top of your head, and that column weighs something, and that's that 30 millimeters of mercury. But in your jugulars, that column of fluid is under the jugulars. It's not sitting all on top. And so believe it or not, in your jugulars, you only need 3 millimeters. 1/10 of the pressure that it took for you to push on the back of your hand is all we need to occlude the jugular. That's 3 millimeters of mercury when your carotid artery is 120 millimeters of mercury. So people are like, oh, but your carotid arteries are right there. Yeah, we know. We made sure, real sure, that we weren't even in a magnitude of the amount of pressure needed to actually compress your jugular artery, or excuse me, your carotid artery. So when you put the device on, we do have a slight compression of the facial vein, which causes a mild flushing sensation in your face. That flushing sensation is pretty much gone in 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. And if you just run around the block one time, you won't even know it's there. And that's what we're getting from the 10,000 athletes that are now wearing it. There are 45, I believe, professional NFL players. 8 were in the playoffs wearing it. Boston Scott got a touchdown with the cue collar on. You're right. Tony Pollard wore it for the Dallas Cowboys, and Dalton Schultz was amazing. If you really want to see something amazing also is to see Michael Pratt of Tulane. That quarterback sits back in the pocket and just does a beautiful, he is so sure of himself when he's actually back there with his cue collar on. And that's only, he only wore it this 1 year. And I'm pretty sure Tulane now got into the rankings for the first time since their team ever was started.
And so looking at the price point, it's $199 on the website. It's relatively inexpensive if you think about what the potential is. Because, you know, you think about a concussion here in the state of Texas, where they have to, if someone suspects them of a concussion, then they have to be sat out. They have to be cleared by a doctor. They have to complete a return to play protocol and then a final clearance by the doctor. And all that's part of the concussion oversight team. And so just going to the doctor and then, you know, if you have to do any sort of vestibular therapy, anything like that, it's obviously going to be more than $200. And like you said, it isn't 100%, but you said about 70% can prevent or reduce TBI. It's really, it's quite amazing. And I do want to continue to talk about some of the other stuff you're doing too, as far as the book and the Sage Breather. But you mentioned the Army Rangers will wear this through their whole like 24-hour training thing. And so is there a time limit for wearing this? Like you can only wear it for 24 hours at a time. And then also it mentions that there's an adjustment period. What do the athletes feel and experience if I have one that buys it? How can I coach them through, yes, this is normal for the cue collar?
Well, I am very proud of the fact that our Army Rangers during their 39th annual competition down in Fort Benning, Georgia, all of them were outfitted and wore the cue collar. We partnered with the Army. We actually blew up a bank here in Cincinnati, Ohio with 30 SWAT officers. Half of them wear cue collars, half did not. I tried to explain to the military early in this research process that I was going to take the energy of an IED force and let it pass through your soldier's brain instead of being absorbed. And I think everybody thought I was smoking something. right? But in reality, that's exactly what happens. This tiny amount of compression does allow that IE-80 force to pass right on through. And the soldiers have also come back, and I think there's about 100 professional athletes that also come back and say, hey, I'm just more spatially aware. I know where things are. I know when people are coming to hit me. I feel my reaction time is better. We haven't submitted any of those claims to the FDA, but it's patented for just that. So remember, we physiologically are identical to a yawn. And we now know in the literature that yawns activate your attentional network. They increase your spatial awareness when you yawn. And you can't just go out on the football field and start yawning. Your coach is going to bench you, right? And you sure can't go yawning when you're running across a field on the military. And so we give that physiology to people without actually having to invoke that yawn. You're right. There is a price point that is acceptable to people. But when you compare that to Daniel Spate, he is the lead author of the largest traumatic brain injury study ever done. He points out that because most TBI occurs to a younger population that tends to not die of their affliction, that the cost of human suffering and financial cost of traumatic brain injury is greater than strokes, heart attacks, and cancer. This is a huge problem, and it transcends across all fields. Sports are definitely where we're concentrating our efforts in the initial stages. We've jumped out into the military. The downhill bobsled and skeleton international organization endorsed us. I'm told this, I wasn't there, that the very first national teammate that wore the cue collar down couldn't believe at the bottom of those ice channels banging into the sides and the walls all the way down, they normally get a hangover. They get ringing in their ears and they get fatigued and a little bit disoriented. And that happens every run. There was none of that anymore. It's gone. And they handed it to the next person. The next thing I know, we sold apparently the entire national team of that sport. So rodeo is using it, equestrian sports, basketball. I understand that we just started talking to the Major League Baseball. So there's an enormous amount of acceptance to this. There's a tactical cue collar now. So the military made us make this device so it could not start to catch fire or burn. That was important for firemen and first responders. And obviously you don't want to go out onto a military battlefield with something that could burn. So that's now available to people as well.
So you may have said it, but is there a time limit, no more than 24 hours at a time?
Yeah, the FDA made us put a time limit. But again, the compression of a vein isn't a concern. I mean, you're sitting on your veins right now, and none of us seem to be too worried about that prospect. But we were concerned, and so the literature is quite clear. People allow this pressure and volume rise when you sleep at night. That's 8 hours. And there's never been a concern in any way, shape, or form. And there are other literature findings that show that you can compress veins for certain periods of time. The FDA took that number and just split it in half and said you can wear it continuously for 4 hours. Now, if you're in most sports, you can take it on and take it off. Most people take it off and put it around their bicep. Some of them put it around their calf. But most people forget it's on and they just leave it on. And you're not going to be harmed by leaving it on. But there are some that say that if you leave it on long enough, that your brain and body will try to pull that fluid back out. And so maybe it won't be as efficacious and capable at protecting you. But in reality, it is. I mean, I wore it for 2 straight weeks. My son, who's a football player in high school at the time, he was the first high school player to ever wear this in the high school sports. He wore it for 2 days straight without any concerns or complications. And it really isn't a concern.
All right. It's definitely something I'm interested in, getting our hands off for the kids. Testing out, because we see a ton of concussions and we've seen them more in the female sports. And so it's definitely something that, looking on the website, there's different sizes. And so I don't think that's a question we need to adjust, because it just says measure your neck 3 times and splitting the thing there. So it gives you instructions on how to measure, how to get the proper sizing for the cue collar. So in your book, When Heads Come Together, this is a more detailed story about your journey to solve the traumatic brain injury. So again, the book is When Heads Come Together for from Dr. David Smith, inventor of the Q-Color. So tell us a little bit about the book, some more of the interesting details.
It is available anywhere books are sold. You'll notice again that the foreword was actually written by Dr. Julian Bales. And Julian, like with Ben and Amalu, was the one who kind of gave me my opening. He listened to me about this crazy doctor who thought that woodpeckers could be an answer to all of our problems. I mean, he was the chief of neurosurgery at that time. And the book goes into all of the background information, all the physiology. It goes into the trials and the tribulations. I got to meet Ben and Amalu. He's the one that first came up with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So there's a lot of very interesting little stories that kind of jokingly but painstakingly go through this crazy 15-year process of getting this medical device through the FDA.
One of the things that in your bio I was, I guess, taken back by was you the SAGE rebreather. So I need you to kind of talk through that, but it says that it can reduce the damage done by TBI.
Correct. The process is early. We spun this off more or less during COVID. We unfortunately couldn't get any subjects to study this during COVID. So all of the research got shut down for several years. The first thing that we realized about woodpeckers was this whole thing about living in a cavity, and the CO2 levels were the ones that really triggered me. So from an arterial side, we can fill up the cranial space with using and manipulating CO2. So we ended up looking into the physiology of how a giraffe rebreathes its own exhaled gases, and you end up with a very precise stepwise increase in the carbon dioxide level in your bloodstream. In two breaths, we actually raise that intracranial volume similarly to what happens in a Q-Collar. Now, we're not planning on taking this out there to prevent diseases or concussions and things of that nature. But the thing that's fascinating is in the very first 10 minutes after a concussive event, you go through what's called the critical time period. And there's this massive cascade of chemicals that actually rise and then mostly fall in the first 30 minutes. Some go on for hours, but certainly there's never been anyone that's ever addressed that time period. And so we ended up actually partnering, if you will, or affiliating with Dr. Jed Hardings. He is the head of the Neurotrauma Research Center at University of Cincinnati, and he's a world-leading authority on something called spreading depolarizations. It's how the brain actually dies. And so I read everything he'd ever written. In fact, I read every article on spreading depolarizations there's ever been written. And I came to him one day and I said, you know, you guys sit there with a monitor of these spreading depolarizations, but you don't seem to have anything to trigger a change. And well, CO2 is your trigger. And please, let's look into this. And so after he came back to five more talks of mine, he actually pulled out his old data, 400 different individual patients that had been monitored thousands of times for these spreading depolarizations. And at the same time, they had an entitled carbon dioxide monitor on them, but nobody ever tried to correlate them to see if CO2 actually affected the amount of spreading depolarizations. And in fact, there was nearly 100% concordance rate. Every time the CO2 went up, the spreading depolarizations went down in his traumatic brain injury suffered patients. And every single time that the CO2 went down, the spreading depolarizations took off. And so one day my phone gets blown up and I wasn't able to answer all of his calls. And it turns out he had a 28-year-old patient that was doing very poorly in the neurointensive care unit on a ventilator. And he reached the legal definition of brain death. And all the doctors and the team of physicians were going to go out and tell the family, well, he's now died legally and we need to remove the vent. And Jed steps up and goes, hey, remember Dr. Dave's lecture 30 days ago? He said, what's wrong with raising his CO2 to head ramming sheep level? So everybody kind of chuckled and remembered my talk about the different CO2 levels that all these animals do on a regular basis. And they did it. They actually got a permission from the family. The gentleman was dead in their eyes, sadly. And within 4 hours, the spreading depolarizations disappeared. And the next day he woke up. We got a $4.2 million Department of Defense grant on the basis of this and others to actually study this. And that study is going on right as we speak. So we're very excited to see what's going on here. But it's our contention that we feel that we've truly found a way to alter what happens after an injury. So We think the Q-collar will block a large lion's share of the brain injury, but there are going to be people that have a traumatic brain injury without a collar on, or collar can't prevent them all. So can we do anything to mop up the damage that the body is suffering? And we have that process in the works. That's act two, if you will. Hard to wrap your brain around, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, there's so many like questions. When do you anticipate something like that being available to like medical facilities?
So the technology and physiology of rebreathing one's own gases has been around for quite some time. In fact, I think the first rebreather was back in the 1950s, but we're patented specifically because you're not allowed to use the word fail-safe anytime with a medical device, but there's almost no conceivable way that you could become harmed with this technology. It can't allow your CO2 to go run away and go elevated. And people have this perception that carbon dioxide is some kind of a toxin or a poison, but it's not. Every cell of your body produces carbon dioxide. It is an asphyxiant. So if it goes too high, you're not going to be happy. Your oxygen level can be pushed out away from your being. You could have headaches and you could have a faster heart rate. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen, but we're talking about very tiny levels of CO2 retention that cause a quick and rapid boost to the arterial tree into the cranial space. It increases cerebral blood flow, which is what exactly you need after a brain injury. You don't want a reduction in brain flow. So all of these things take some time. So we think we're in a spinoff, we're in a money raise to get this thing high kicked. We're looking probably about a year and a half to get this out through the FDA.
That is fascinating. Just think of one, there's a simple obtainable tool for every athlete to prevent, more or less, to greatly reduce the chance of concussion. And then if there is the opportunity to reduce that.
So we've actually, other peripheral type conditions like altitude sickness turns out to be CO2, diminished CO2 levels. And I took my own device at prototype stage up to the top of Pike's Peak at 14,200 feet. I'm an all-American swimmer. I have the lungs of a whale. I couldn't walk across the parking lot at 14,000 feet. I was so out of breath. I was nauseous. I couldn't figure out how to put one foot in front of another. Put our device on in 2 minutes. I was 100% completely normal. We also block sleep apnea. We have two major facilities that are starting a sleep study on both cases to eradicate obstructive and central sleep apnea. We've had 5 patients with postural orthostatic tachycardic syndrome, where when they stand up, the blood leaves their cranial space. They fall out, oftentimes are nauseous and fall. Though all 5 of them had 100% resolution of their symptoms for hours by just breathing on our device for 10 minutes. So there's a lot of really fun excitement and physiology coming, and it's just not a harmful technology at all. And like I said, you won't even know you've used it or worn it.
I guess getting a little personal, have you personally ever had a concussion? You said swimmer, and they're not most likely exposed to concussions, but you, or I know you mentioned your son played football. Have you experienced it first or secondhand?
I have had the proverbial kind of lights go sparkly on me. So I was a swimmer, and you're right, water is a lot softer than that football field or those football players coming at me. I did play one season, and I'm going to be honest with you, I just sucked. I was strong and they couldn't wear me out. Again, I was an all-American swimmer. Coaches were drooling over me. I could just literally pick up people and throw them out of my way, but I couldn't put my head down. I could not tackle with my head down. I was big into academics. I feared hurting my head, and it just couldn't get past me to do so. That said, you still get tackled. Your head hits the ground. So I've had the lights out on me several times, but I don't think anyone's ever, and this was back in the 1980s, so nobody ever really conceived of, hey, let's get you in a concussion protocol. It's the same thing with my son. I came to him when the study results were coming back, and I said, Zachary, you can't take this collar off. He goes, oh, geez, Dad, don't worry about it. Says, I'm the smallest middle linebacker that they've ever had here. And I'm telling you that every time I get hit with the cue collar, I don't get that split second of getting my bell rung anymore. In fact, I know where people are before they get here. And again, I full disclosure, we've not submitted this data to the FDA, but we have 100 professional athletes that have said that they have this awareness about them. Omar Gonzalez came running up into the stands. He is a professional soccer player from the New England Revolution. And he came running up because he heard the inventor of the cue collar was in the stands. I just loved this. And he just gushed over me and said, I will never take this off. He says, I'm a different player out there. I know where things are. And this is that theme that we keep hearing over and over again. And you can imagine the military is quite interested in these physiological advantages, potential advantages as well. So again, full disclosure, I am not claiming this in any way, shape, or form, but these are just anecdotal stories that have been passed to me from day one that we again patented way back in 2008 and 9, because we theoretically figured it had to improve your awareness. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I listening to like the Jocko podcast, you know, and one time they were talking about, like, you know, the gunners, you know, they're just sitting there launching the mortars, and it's just repetitive concussive blows because you know, you're launching a rocket launcher and it's right there at your head. Poof, 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 poof. And they now have a way to potentially prevent any of that damage. That's crazy.
Well, amazingly, the number one cost to the Veterans Administration here in the United States is hearing aids. So we did this in animal studies. Again, we didn't want to, you know, imperil anyone's hearing, but in animal studies with IED levels of force into the hearing structure, we block 93% of the hearing loss with just jugular compression. One of my design engineers came to me after having read a white paper from me writing back in 2009. And she said, hey, I run the sound system for my husband's heavy metal band. I sit right next to these massive, massive speakers. I get an acoustic hangover. I am disoriented after a night of doing this. I've got ringing in my ears for the entire next day. I'm exhausted with a headache. Could I borrow a prototype and give it a try? And of course, she's never taken the cue collar off since, because guess what? She has no acoustic hangover, and there was no alteration in your perception of the different frequencies of sound. That's critical. And remember, you have all of these professional artists that are actually singers and band players and whatnot. You look at them, they're all having troubles with hearing later on in life. And I shoot a gun on a regular basis. I'm not that great at it, but I enjoy that profession, that sport, if you will. And even with hearing muffs and an earplug going down, blocking that little tiny canal, that's the only thing they block, I got ringing in my ears. Now, I won't take my muff off. I'm too scared of hurting my hearing. But with the cue collar on and my muff and my plug, I have no ringing whatsoever after an afternoon of shooting. You can see the military is happy with that.
Yeah, it's super cool. Super cool. And we're almost out of time here. So if someone wants to get a hold of you, what's going to be the best way for someone to reach out and get a hold of you?
Well, my website is davidsmithmd.com. You can get a background of the bio. All of the research is in there. There's massive videos. There are visuals to help people understand the physics that's going on. That's probably the best way to reach out to us here at the Delta Chase and Q30. .com site is linked there. So Q30 is focusing on just the collaring device. Their website's beautiful. I can brag about it because I had nothing to do with it. They also have created a sleeve that goes around the cue collar, which is they've got 15 different colors. It is made out of a wicking material. It actually is fire impervious for the military also, but this enables us to give you a much more pleasant environment when wearing this. I understand that the football players are dunking them in ice water and then putting it around the neck. That's also helping to cool them off for minutes at a time, or I don't know how long that's lasting. Again, I didn't invent the sleeve, so I can brag heavily on that. This is mine. My wife's got a purple one, as you can see. We wear these continuously when we bike. I'm just telling you, it's just something that's ubiquitous that people can start using. I'm hoping that someday it's going to just be standard equipment for people that are in any kind of a concussive environment.
You know, if they're going to be having these at like any of the shows, like we have the National Athletic Trainers Convention coming up in June, do you know if Q30 will be at any of those type events?
I certainly would hope so. I don't run that company. I'm just the inventor. But I know that they've been into a lot of different military venues. They were in many of the NFL. You know, I don't think the NFL like comes out and endorses anything, but there's something called Foundations for Football that all the NFL owners join in to try to help improve the safety. Okay, we're one of the three featured companies on that video series, if you look that up. So yes, the answer is I'm sure we're going to be everywhere. But this was just our very first season of launch here in the United States. And so we are literally, I'm sure Q30 is kind of getting up on their legs and trying to just understand where they have to be. But the athletic training environment is a focus for them. It always has been. I was a speaker out at, I believe it's called FATS, out in Arizona a few years ago. So yes, we're definitely wanting to influence and help spread the information out there to all in your world.
Fantastic. Again, davidsmithmd.com. That's his website, has the book, has the information about the Q color, like you said, all that stuff. David W. Smith, MD on Twitter, David W. Smith, MD on Facebook, and David W. Smith, MD on Instagram. So find him, connect with him there. Or like I said, if you go to the website, it has all that information, davidsmithmd.com. Dr. David Smith, any last thoughts right before we close it out?
Well, I do hope people do kind of connect. We are not done. We have come up with a brand new patent on the glymphatic system that will hopefully reverse chronic traumatic. This is hopefully, we're very early, but this whole recognition of looking to nature has enabled us to look at this entire problem a different way. We are branching out into multiple different arenas that we believe we can make a difference in people's lives. So I do hope people follow us. We are not done.
Fantastic. Again, thank you for joining us on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Q collar, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Q collar. So for Jeremy and Dr. David Smith and the Sports Medicine Broadcast, that is a wrap. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Take care.